morning. Welcome to the July 26, 2017 Safety Officer Teleconference. Thanks for joining the call. This call is being recorded to be available for playback later as a podcast. I hope I've gotten some emails saying people like that podcast feature and listen in that way. My name is Walter Krijalis, President of Aeronomics. I'm your host and discussion moderator. I am an ISBAO auditor and aviation consultant and attorney, and I'm proud to host these calls as a means for safety officers to get together to compare notes, commiserate, and cry in their beers together, and share ideas on aviation safety and safety management system. Our sponsor for these calls is Allianz Aviation Insurance. I want to thank them for their support and all their efforts in enhancing aviation safety. Just curious if anybody is calling in from Oshkosh this morning that might be attending Air Adventure or Air Venture. Not hearing anybody, but Allianz hosts on Wednesday night Biplanes Beer and Brats Party. I went last year. It's a good time. Mm-hmm. If you're there and you didn't get an invite, email me and I'll see if I can get you in. Quickly, some ground rules for everyone on the call, especially for those on the call for the first time. I'll keep this to 30 minutes. Again, the call is being recorded to be available as a podcast. So with that said, no need to use your full name or company name. If you wish to join the make a comment on the call, just use your first name. Please use your mute button feature on your phone. It helps cut down on the background noise. So with that done, last call 2 weeks ago, we primarily discussed what happened that evening. At that time was the Air Canada go-around at SFO when they apparently inadvertently lined up with a taxiway on the runway. Just curious if anybody had any additional comments on this or anything they wanted to add to that. If so, just go ahead and unmute yourself and pipe up. Not hearing anything. We also talked briefly at the end of the call about some of the issues that I was seeing as an auditor about the difference between safety goals and safety KPIs, key performance indicators. Didn't have much time to talk about that, but just curious if anybody had any comments or questions about that. Again, not hearing anything. Moving on. It's a regular feature on the call, at least to bring up if there's any aviation accidents or incidents pertinent to business aviation since our last call. Did my research. I did not find anything that was worth mentioning. Does anybody have an event they want to bring up or that I might have missed? That's when they brought up the SFO incident last call. Anything?
Hey, Walter, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hey. I wanted to, I did the preliminary review of the sidestep to the taxiway and all that in San Francisco, but I haven't followed up on it. I don't know if they had any definitive findings or if it was just distracted crew. Have you got any input on that?
I haven't seen anything. One thing interesting about Canada, they report, the CADWRS system. I haven't taken the time to do that, but I'm sure that incident is probably in that system. And Transport Canada may have something on there.
I didn't know if that was a common occurrence at San Francisco, and the reason that I it kind of stuck in my mind is because of the little incident down in Orange County with Harrison Ford. And if you look at the taxiway versus the narrow runway that he was going into, the taxiway is enormous and well marked, and the runway looks like it's an overgrown footprint.
Yeah. Well, and which is not too confusing because Van Nuys, the parallel 17, basically is a taxiway, or was at one time. I mean, it looks like a taxiway, but it's a runway.
Las
my understanding
Vegas.
About the SFO incident, though, was that so these were the parallels to 27, and one of the runways was closed, and lights were out, and so if you only see two string of lights and you're used to seeing
two string lights
being two runways, I thought that was the additional confusion. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong on that, but
one of the things that they did, Las Vegas, 19 left and right, they had that large taxiway to the west, and they had a number of incidents, people attempting or landing on the taxiway, and they eventually put a big fat sine wave in yellow up the taxiway, an S curve all the way up, and it's virtually eliminated that situation. Surprised more airports haven't adopted that.
I'm sure something will come out more definitive about this, but I haven't seen anything. Does anybody else have seen anything?
And the only thing I've seen, Walter, this is Bob, is that apparently the crew did not have the localizer tuned in as a backup. That may prove to be the, straw that broke this particular camel's back. It certainly would have given them a clue. They were shooting the visual, and the way that is set up at San Francisco, you are coming in not straight into the runway from the visual, but at an angle of perhaps 10 or 15 degrees offset to the north side. And a course correction is required. So in any case, that's the only other thing that I have seen. But, no, I think both the NTSB and Canadians are obviously looking hard at it. And apparently there was a second person in the cab at the time, but that second controller was, either getting coffee or, the one controller was working ground, local as well as clearance delivery, is my understanding. So, but as we mentioned last time, there's no way from his perspective in that cab, which is literally a mile and a half from the threshold, that he could see the difference between somebody lined up on the runway and the taxiway, because they're, 200 feet apart from that kind of distance.
So,
anyway.
I would like to squeeze maybe a little more juice out of this. Let's take our pilot or our mechanic hats off and put our safety officer hats on and look at it through those lenses of, again, we have only preliminary information, but just using what we have, how to treat it, identify hazards, mitigate risks, what is the hazard here, just quickly, just spitballing here, a review of NOTAMs, making sure, not only did you look at it at the beginning of the flight, but you remember after a four-hour flight that, hey, the parallel runway's closed. a breakdown in SOPs of tuning in the ILS or the localizer. You know, and the other mindset is, you know, if it happened to those guys, could happen to any of our guys. You know, corrective action would be, you know, a reemphasis of SOPs with the localizer. How would you guys handle that within your own department? Let's say we identified those hazards and just as an exercise quickly, what would you do next? Anybody?
Well, this is Rick.
Go ahead.
We've already discussed it ever since the last meeting. Sent out a brief, you know, reminding everyone to tune whatever approach or build an approach.
Even line up that. He said that he's right. It's according to the article, the air traffic controller notified him, but he only notified him after explaining that he was getting ready to come over, was going, hello.
So I'm hearing a conversation. I don't know if they're where they're on the call. So it's right. I mean, basically, you know, have to put out a memo of reemphasizing, you know, or an email blast or through your SMS if it's one of those online features, you know, must read to say, hey, guys, emphasis of reviewing NOTAMs, reviewing our SOPs of if there's a localizer available, tune it in or whatever approach it is. Just remembering a visual approach, especially at night, is an increased risk than daytime. You know, there has to be a corrective action out of this. So another item would be go to SFO in your next, you know, tell your training vendor next time everybody comes through, we want one night landing at SFO with the lights turned off on one of the parallels, and just exactly experience the same thing, just to see what it looks like. So, you know, anyways, I think I'd like to move on and open up the call to any new topics somebody may have. So does anyone have an issue that they're encountering they wish to bring up for discussion? If so, go ahead, unmute yourself, and time to ask your peers here what they think.
Yeah, hey, this is Chris.
Hey, Chris.
I was looking at ISBO 853. I think it was new out in 2016. It says, does the operator have procedures to protect CVR and FDR data from inappropriate use? And they're talking about the use of safety information for other than safety-related purposes may inhibit the future availability of such information. And I was wondering if anybody got any pushback from upper management regarding including something like that in their flood operations manual or something like that.
Okay, Chris, thank you. Maybe embellish your question a little bit. What pushback could there be from management?
The pushback that I got was that the aircraft and its components are a company-owned asset, and if the equipment on board would indicate, such as an FDR or CVR, that something was being done incorrectly, it would be used for purposes other than accident investigation.
Okay. Interesting. Anybody want to comment on that? Nobody wants? Nobody wants to comment on it. In all sincerity, that's kind of my first encounter that of some resistance along those lines. You know, I mean, the grand purpose of both those boxes is for accident investigation. It's expanded to where it's data being collected and can be mined through with CFOCLA or FOCLA, maybe not so much the CDR. So it's interesting that so what I'm used to seeing as an auditor, what everybody's policy, which is, and I haven't seen much deviation from this, is that, you know, there's a statement that more or less says, you know, the integrity of this data is important. No pilot or mechanic will purposely erase it or turn it off at any time with the intention of flight. And then, of course, if someone has a FOCLA program, there's more verbiage there of, you know, how the data is treated and sanitized. I don't know what more to add there. Does anybody have anything more?
Walter, this is Bob. I remember when this first came out, and there is some guidance in, I believe, either the standard or the implementation guide. Basically, what they're looking for, I believe, in this particular instance, is a statement stating that the operator will only use that data for incident or accident investigation. And I remember sitting in on the standards board at that point in time, and one of the reasons that came up was from a lawyer, and that statement basically gives the company's legal department time to, in other words, they don't have to turn over the information right away. It gives them time to come up with some kind of a rationale as to when and how they will disseminate any information that's on the flight data or cockpit voice recorder. So the statement they're looking for is in either the, I believe it's in either, maybe it's in the implementation guide, but it's either in the standard or the implementation guide. And basically that's all it says, is that that data will only be used for incident and accident investigation. So
right.
It's your manual. That implies that it's your investigation. Eventually, obviously, you're going to have to turn it over to the NTSB if there's an accident. But it prevents...
Well, thanks, Bob. I don't mean to put you on the spot, Chris, but and maybe I misunderstood. Is management reluctant to go along the lines with that because they want to have the latitude to pull that information for any reason they want? Is that what you're getting?
That was the impression I got. And you know, we do have a non-retribution policy, so I wouldn't think it would be for any type of punitive action, but it would be for, you know, like a FOCLA-esque, except we don't have that. So it's kind of like a monitoring or whatever, if the company wanted to.
Yes, I would. I mean, from what you shared, you know, that's not appropriate use of the data.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's you know, it's meant to be used for safety purposes and not necessarily, you know, specific disciplinary actions. Even though you have the non-retribution, I don't know what else they could be using it for. I guess, you know, just kind of thinking outside the box, one could use FDR data for, you know, how well does this make and model cruise at a certain altitude? You know, maybe if you're using it for operational efficiencies, you know, fleet statistics or something like that. I don't know of anybody doing that. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody was, but I don't see why they couldn't, like, write that in and, you know, restrict themselves to that's what they're doing with the data, as opposed to it just being an open door, whatever they can use it for, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting and kind of haunting all at the same time.
Yes. Anybody have another comment or about that? And for those of you that might be on the call going, we're supposed to have a what? I'm joking. You know, it is good to have, you know, every Jets pretty much got the CVR. The FDR may or may not be there. But there should be a policy of protecting that data and the integrity of the collection of it. And if there is an incident, you know, you're not allowed to erase it. All right. Unless anybody has another comment about that, we've got time to throw it out if anybody has another question, another issue they want to bring up. Everybody's SMS is humming along just fine.
Hey, this is Craig. I just wanted to bring up, I don't know if anybody else saw this citation that rolled off the ramp in Las Vegas this week.
No, I didn't pick up on that. What happened?
Well, looking at the news report, pretty significant incident, looks like, that it's reporting that, and I'll just read the report here, it says that mid-sized business jet sustained significant damage Friday when it rolled off the concrete apron, crashed into a fence and rocks at Henderson Executive Airport, just outside of Las Vegas there. It goes on to say that, quote, the report is that a mechanic just completed some work and failed to set the brakes and the wheels weren't chocked. The plane rolled down a fairly steep embankment, hit a fence, and has significant damages, not going to fly. And so I don't know if anybody else saw that. I talked with my, you know, our vice president, of, you know, director of maintenance on this, and maybe some human factors that went into this. And, you know, it's obviously impossible to know exactly what happened, but, you know, got us talking about, you know, maybe a complacency issue or maybe a distraction, lack of awareness. So just didn't know if anybody else had seen that and had that discussion in their own flight departments. And just thought I'd bring it up for a quick topic of conversation.
Well, thank you, Craig. Thanks for that. It's I did not see that. I mean, the first thought in my mind when you brought this up was, hey, guys, most aircraft damage is done on the ramp. I mean, there's millions and millions of dollars of damage done every year to aircraft from parking and hangar rash and towing incidents. And, yes, it's all good to, you know, while in flight to not become a lawn dart, but, you know, it's keep up the vigilance even on the ground. So I've read recently how many aircraft start up without the parking brake set and start rolling. So it does take going back to the basics. And as an auditor, I've actually, you know, sometimes you have your we all have our little soapbox issues just, you know, as a service to the industry. And then since I've read about parking brakes, is like I make sure that parking brake is on everybody's normal checklist before startup. You know, make sure it's there. Same for gear pins. That still goes on out there. So, Anybody have a comment? Any other takeaway from that incident?
Well, no, Walter. It's Bob. Bob also. I think I've mentioned this before, and maybe you can find that statistic being in the insurance business easier than I can, but the last time I saw something published, it was a really scary number that one out of 12 aircraft are damaged annually on the ground. That's 8% of the fleet every year, you know, whether it's a mechanic dropping a tool, a pilot taxiing into a fence, just from all, any, it's on the ground, one out of 12 airplanes. I mean, that's an incredibly high number. I read that several years ago, but I don't know if it's gotten any better.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll reach out to my contacts at Allianz and see what they have. It is a high number. It is shocking. And it's very much on their radar because of the whole diminution of value issue. So, you know, if you have your, you know, G450 that's worth X dollars and you put a crease in it because it, you know, the tow bar jackknifed and now it went over the tug and creased the pressure vessel. And, you know, there's the amount of money to physically fix that airplane, but then there's, oh, now it has damage history. And it has lost value, the diminution in value. And so and that can be a number bigger than the actual physical damage. So it's very important.
Yeah, Walter, I'll send you a link to that news story. You can take a look at it if it helps to get out to others. Great. If not, then so be it. But anyway, just thought I'd bring that up.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up, Craig. That's, you know, the basics are important, you know, making sure chocks are in before releasing the brakes kind of thing. So, all right.
Walter, this is Carl. Do you have time for one more quick statement?
Yes, go ahead, Carl.
I think part of the issue here with this, and I did see this, it was on Facebook a few days ago, the Citation 10, and it really rolled far. But I think sometimes our attitude, even as pilots and maintenance techs and others in the industry, is when we hear about airplanes doing that or wingtips meeting on the ramp or hangar rash, we all just kind of look at, okay, that we just kind of accept it as being part of business. Now, when there's an incident or something as serious as San Francisco, we all stop and we have to investigate it. But we don't carry that same level of attention to what you stated earlier, that we our most concern really should be what's done on the ground versus flying into another airplane or into a mountain. And I think the industry just kind of looks at hangar rash like as just being, well, it happens and we just deal with it. Just my opinion, my thought.
Well, thanks for that. I'm sorry, was it Carl or Tom?
It's Carl. Carl.
Oh, well, Carl, thank you. We all kind of like, after landing the plane on the crosswind and, you know, hopefully the boss will say a nice cute word on the way out, you know, we all exhale, you know, when we get on the taxiway, time to clean it up. I mean, we've all been there. You just mentally let your guard down ever so slightly. And, gosh help you, if it's only just the crew, it lets down even more. It's important. I put this all in the category of professionalism, of, you know, the company has entrusted you to take this airplane, leave with it and come back with it. Please come back with it in one piece and nobody hurt. And to take it seriously. Are you going to get a bonus or kudos for saving the day from a wingtip, you know, while it was being towed? Maybe not, but that is something that you can report now, and maybe, you know, that's all part of professionalism. So Well, thanks for sharing that, Carl. I see it's 12 o'clock, so time to wrap up the call. I wish to thank all of you for joining, and especially to those who shared their comments. Sign up for Twitter at Aeronomics, and we do have the LinkedIn group. I keep mentioning it. Like to get it generating some activity. If we can keep the discussion going or lob questions in there. I know that there's not the nice aspect of anonymity on the LinkedIn group. You know, one's not necessarily comfortable to air their dirty laundry, but, you know, we can talk in the hypothetical and have that tool available to be useful. I want to thank Allianz again for their sponsorship. Our next call is in 2 weeks on August 9th. Again, please remember to use the new dial-in number. I do have a feedback box on the Aeronomics website. If you have any comments or questions you want to toss my way for the next call, happy to do that. So thank you, everyone. Signing off. It's all about identifying hazards and mitigating risks. So thank you, and talk to you again in 2 weeks. Bye, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.